Hey, welcome in. We'll talk Razorback football today with Tom Murphy here in studio with us. Razorbacks can play their spring game on Saturday afternoon over at Razorback Stadium. I want to tell you that the podcast brought to you today by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup, and that includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with six times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. Also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Appreciate you being with us wherever you're watching or listening, maybe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, watching on YouTube. We put these on our social media channels at Facebook and Twitter as well. Hope that you'll subscribe so you won't miss any of our episodes. Razorback baseball in action tonight. They'll play at Missouri. It's a 7 o'clock first pitch. The game's going to be televised by SEC Network. Hunter Dietz will be on the mound for the Razorbacks. Missouri on a 26-game SEC home losing streak. Think about that for a second. They have lost their last 26 home conference games. And Bubba Carpenter told me yesterday, he said, you're going to jinx it by talking about this. I said, but man, Tex Aggs, I know that they were probably talking about this whenever A&M went there, you know, whenever. Like at some point, you know, the law of averages says that Missouri is going to win a home game. But Arkansas needs to win these games this weekend.
I remember they went 0-for, so 0-for-15 last
year. 0-for-15 last year. They're 0-9 this year, and they lost their last two home games in 2024. Do you know how hard it is to lose 26 conference games in a row at home?
Oh, that is stunning.
You know, Missouri baseball, I was thinking about this morning. It is the modern-day Vanderbilt football. Remember like what Vanderbilt football was for all those years in the 90s and in the 2000s? And it was like Nate Allen had a line that he would stick in his column Vanderbilt Week. It would say, oh, Dandy, it's Vandy. And that's kind of how – I kind of feel like that's how teams view Missouri. Like you have to treat them with respect. I mean, they've got players who are on an SEC roster, and I get that. And you have to prepare for them, and you have to think that they could come in and win. They went and won a series at Kentucky. They're certainly capable of winning some games, and it's not as bad this year. You know, like they haven't had that 51-9 weekend like they had against Arkansas last year, but they're clearly, from a resource perspective, from a roster perspective, they're well below where everybody else is in the SEC right now.
Yeah, they are. But I think they're a better roster than they were last year. So
that's what they say.
So it could be tricky. Arkansas has had some up and downs, and it's hard to sweep a team.
Missouri lost to SIU Edwardsville, by the way. We're going to talk football in just a second. They lost to SIU Edwardsville on Tuesday night. Basically, it was the exact same game that Arkansas played against Missouri State. Mizzou was up 4-3 going into the eighth inning. SIU Edwardsville scored 8 in the eighth and won the game 11-5. So it's been a rough time for Missouri. They've lost 7 in a row overall. Like we said, they've not been particularly good at home. They've lost 20 of 25 since SEC play began. That's taken conference play and the midweek non-conference games into account. All right, so Razorback football – Saturday afternoon is when they're going to play their spring game over at Razorback Stadium. I believe 2 o'clock is.
That's right.
Is there going to be a kickoff? Like, can you say it's a 2 o'clock kickoff, or do they just put the ball out there and start on the 25?
A lot of the special team. Well, the special teams won't be live, and I'm not sure if there will be a kickoff or not. I think when they punt, it's just going to be skeleton, and wherever you catch the punt, they're not going to run it back. You know, special teams have not been live in anybody's spring game in a long time, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And so, no, there won't technically be a kickoff, Matt, but it is at 2 p.m.
So 2 p.m., this is not going to be televised. It's not going to be streamed. Arkansas, we got a story about this on our website at Whole Hog Sports this morning. They're falling in line with what pretty much everybody else is doing in college football, which is not televising games, not streaming them. You know, 2 years ago, you would get a press release from ESPN, and it would say, hey, all, at that time, 14, Was Texas in the league yet?
No.
Was that their first? No, it was their first year.
2 years
ago. So it was going. But either way, so all the teams in the SEC, here's their kickoffs. Here, you know, and here's their spring game, not kickoffs. Here's their spring game information. You know, it's going to be on ESPN. This one's going to be on ESPN2. This one's only going to be streamed. You know, we're going to set them where none of them really overlap. And you can watch all the SEC. Now, none of them are on. Like, A&M and Georgia are the only two teams this year that had their games either televised or streamed. And I was thinking about this. It reminds me of that old book, you know, you give a mouse a cookie and he's going to want whatever. This is kind of how it goes with spring football and football in general. You take a little bit away, and they're going to take more and more and more and more. I think it's a disservice to the fans not to put this on TV, especially when you're in the first year of a new coach, and not everybody's going to come up here and watch a spring game. I mean, I don't know what kind of – I know they're doing a lot of initiatives this weekend to try to get people into the stadium. They're going to have a Justin Moore concert outside the stadium about an hour and a half before kickoff. I think 12:45 is when that's supposed to start on the north side of the stadium. So they're doing things to try to get people in the door. But to me, whether it be Arkansas – Auburn's in its first year under a new coach. LSU's in its first year under a new coach. Ole Miss, whoever else. Like, make your program accessible to the fans. Put it on TV. Who cares if they get a pre-snap alignment of your Spider 3Y banana? Like, show these people your game. I don't understand this. You know, last year it was all about we don't want coaches watching our spring games and poaching our players in the spring transfer portal. Spring transfer portal doesn't exist anymore. I think that this is a short-sighted decision by these teams that don't put their spring games on TV, because it had become something that had been such a promotional avenue for so many years.
Yeah, you give me a lot to chew on here, Matt, including the fact that you keep Spider 3Y banana up here, and you can recite it at a moment's notice when
it's
needed.
It's because of a John Gruden clip, actually.
Okay.
Go look up John Gruden Spider 3Y banana.
I remember. But so not to go too deep in the weeds here, but you've turned into the grumpy old man on this topic, Matt. And I will say this.
I'll wear that hat proudly.
I did a grumpy old man thing today. I honked at a young lady who was on her cell phone in traffic, and I honked. And
She deserved it.
I made a cell phone gesture to her like, don't be doing this. So I did that. But I get, from the coach's perspective, they get paranoid about who sees what they're doing. I also embrace your idea that give yourself to the fans. And Arkansas, of all the states in the SEC footprint, needs to reunite with its fans more than just about anybody.
I think so.
But when teams start pulling them away from the SEC network, I do understand that the teams who opt to not show their games commit to providing some type of content back to the network to fill the void. And so Arkansas will produce some kind of in-house thing with cameras behind the scenes or whatever they're doing to do that. And on the whole, maybe it's a good idea to broadcast your SEC, your spring football game. But they, by not doing it, they're going to make it harder for any of the other schools out there to access what they do, their formations, and how they signal their plays, and whatever that they're not showing. Spider 3Y banana, mm-hmm. All those things they're not showing. So we'll do the best we can at reporting on what we see and putting it out there. Ryan Silverfield said today on radio that this is going to be very basic.
Mm-hmm.
And I did try to ask the coordinators, how much pressure are you going to show and all? And the answers were a little bit vague. So I don't think you're going to see any exotic pressure packages, any blitzes. You're going to see vanilla sets, and they're working on all the other stuff behind the scenes.
See, if it's so vanilla, then what's the problem in putting it on TV?
Well,
because here's the deal. If Connor Stallions wanted to fly down here for whoever he's working for now and, you know, put on his glasses and watch the game and record it, like, he could do that. Like there's nothing stopping him from doing that. It's all you're doing is you're I don't know. It's
I'm glad you're keeping a lighthearted take on this, Matt, with the Connor Stallion. That's a great reference. And I get it. Maybe at some point the wave, because everything's going in waves. How the portal's conducted, how teams pay their players, everything happens in waves. And maybe at some point the SEC programs decide, you know, we're not showing anything. Mm-hmm. Let's get them back on the air. But, yeah, I mean, I almost felt like the SEC dictated, you all are going to have your spring games on the air, and then the coaches probably behind the scenes got together at spring meeting and said, we don't want our games on the air. And so that's the direction. And so did you say A&M and Georgia?
A&M and Georgia were the only two this year who will do it. Well, and then there's like four or five teams that aren't even having a spring game. Wow. And there's a conversation there, too, to have, because like what is the value of even having a spring game? What the coaches really want to go to, and I think that this is fine, is a like an OTA-type, NFL-type OTA style where you get the players together maybe for like two or three weekends throughout the off season, and you go through some drills and do things like that, as opposed to have this 15 practice spring season that's, you know, that kind of bookends spring break. And, you know, so I mean, if you do that, then the spring game goes away entirely. Yeah. I don't understand, if you're going to have a spring game, why you would not want to broadcast it to all of your fans to be able to watch.
Well, I can only assume that every fan base in the conference are having conversations like this among their media, and the powers that be hear this kind of thing, and they have to weigh the value of doing it versus not. By the way, Silverfield and his staff now are referring to OTAs over the summer, so that's the pro style.
Mm-hmm.
It used to all be voluntary,
yes.
But now if you don't show up, then you are behind, and you are also considered someone who may not be a team player. So it's basically mandatory.
It's involuntary, voluntary workouts.
It really
is what
they
turned into. And it's been that way for a long time.
But what we've seen at the start of a spring session and the start of camp is that because of all the stuff, and the NCAA allows a lot more access to players during summer, in addition to just the strength and conditioning staff, that they're better organized. So coaches have pushed for this as well. So when we see the very start of camp, they look a lot more organized than what it used to be in the old days.
Now, this is going to be on radio. Chuck Barrett is going to call the spring game, if you will, on Razorback Sports Network. I'm not quite sure how that I would just say check your affiliates, because there's also going to be a baseball game at the same time. And a lot of these RSN affiliates, they are both football and baseball affiliates. But I think this is going to be available. You know, I don't know how many people really listen to games on the radio anymore. You know, like actually, you know, get in their car and listen to it on the radio, like on an FM or an AM station. Yeah, I think most people are listening to it on apps. So, I mean, you know, these apps.
You and I are
like,
big app guys, man.
I'm a big app guy.
And let me guess what you're going to be tuned into at 2 p.m.
It won't be Razorback Stadium. I won't be able to watch it from my house. Yeah. No, I'll be covering baseball that day. Like Varsity Network app, you know, they've got all the RSN broadcasts, the Razorback. They've got their, I think they still call it their Game Day app, that you can watch or you can listen to RSN on that. If you want, I want to mention this too, because it's different how you get in on Saturday. You can go for free. I want to make sure I got this right. If you want to go for free, if you're a Razorback Foundation member, you'll get 4 tickets to the game automatically loaded into your account. Students will get 1 ticket loaded into their student access pass account. It says here, any other fans who want to go to the game for free can claim their tickets at the Razorbacks website or scan a QR code entering the stadium Saturday. With a catch, you got to give the Razorback Foundation your email address. If you don't want to give them your email address, you have to pay $10 to get into the stadium. It's kind of interesting, as somebody who's dealt with email marketing, to see what kind of value they put on your email address. $10.
You and I had a very small discussion about these right before we got on the air, and how easy or uneasy it is to unsubscribe.
Oh, when you once they've got your email address, you might as well give them your social security number. They will never let you go. And I'm not talking about the foundation. I'm talking about any business at all that ever gets your email. Have you ever tried to unsubscribe from, like, you know, like let's say you check out at, I don't know, Wendy's. Can we get your email address? And you give it to them. Like, you can click unsubscribe 87 times, and you will still get their email marketing stuff.
I tend now to not, when people ask for mine, I know what the reasoning is. I don't want to give it. So generally, when I don't have to give it, I don't. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, side note, lately to get parking passes at universities for football games,
yep.
And I'll mention the ones that we did last year, Tennessee, LSU, mm-hmm. whomever, mm-hmm. Ole Miss over the years, and Auburn, you have to log in and like create an account, and that gets your email address.
Basically through like a SeatGeek or yes, something
exactly.
like that.
And they're going to send it to you. I've unsubscribed from it, but I keep getting them. And Auburn has been the most persistent because yeah. I'm unsubscribed many times and I keep getting Auburn. Yeah. So, hey guys, if you're watching, drop me. But some of the others do honor that, and I have not gotten follow-up emails from some other things. So mm-hmm. it's a hit and miss, but I agree. They have your information, and you might pop back up.
Yeah, I get. Oh my gosh, it's bad. It's bad. Getting out of an email marketing campaign. It's impossible. It really is. So again, don't be taken aback. If you go to the game, you're gonna have to give them your email address or give them $10 to go. It says here that the $10 will go toward NIL initiatives. Is there anything you think we're going to see Saturday in terms of settling a position battle? And what are the position battles that you've been watching the closest?
Of course, everybody watches quarterback, and they're not
going. But it doesn't feel like it's much of a battle based on what I've read and heard.
Well, I was thinking the same thing and had mentioned that with you and Christina mm-hmm. in recent podcasts that I thought it was KJ's to lose, so to speak. But listening to Tim Kramsey yesterday, I'm going to go into some other areas in a second. He said A.J. Hill's completion percentage, this is 7-on-7 and 11-on-11, mm-hmm. in all the things they track, is at 73%, which is very nice, very high. But I also think that's maybe heavily weighted toward the 7-on-7, which I think is easier to complete passes. Mm-hmm. Because on what we've seen in the team periods, I don't think he's at 73. Mm-hmm. And K.J. Jackson was 71.5. So they're promoting this as a battle right through summer, right through August, into camp. And so I get it. That's what their mm-hmm. stance is going to be. I personally feel like KJ's ahead, but I'm not aware of the inner workings of what meetings look like and all those things. But here's what I'm really looking for. What will they do with the offensive line? Because you hear coach after coach talk about the unity you need and making all the checks and getting everyone on the same page. So will they put what will be projected as their starting five O-linemen with one quarterback or with another quarterback, or will they break them up and mm-hmm. not give them this 15th day of practice all together because you know the value of having them all together? So I'm going to be looking for that. I'm going to be looking for how they break up their top playmakers. And so who are those guys? Sutton Smith and Braylon Russell at tailback, Ishmael Cece, Chris Marshall, C.J. Brown, couple of others at wide receiver. They're going to be on broken up on separate teams. And then the other side of the ball, will they keep Shaw and Jaquavion Smith together at linebacker? Are they going to break those two up? I'll be looking for those kinds of things.
Are they going to score this like a normal spring game?
I haven't heard about the scoring rules.
Because the scoring in spring games, it drives me crazy. You look up and it's like 21 to purple or something. And like, what does this mean? Well, they got 2.5 points for taking the field. I never have quite understood the whole idea behind that.
Right. It's the changing nature of keeping score at spring games. I remember a few years ago, Arkansas loaded up its first team, and I think all the starting offense and defense were on the same team, and they beat them 48-13, and you know, something. Mm-hmm. And then you give different scoring for field goals. And so I don't know what the scoring will be. I think we don't spend a lot of brain power worrying about it. We just get told mm-hmm. what is scoring is going to be. Okay, and then you try to present that in how well they did this and that for scoring. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to try to keep it very balanced in this one, and that's why the rosters are going to be split up.
Right. I think what they're trying to do is kind of like half of their best defensive players might go on one team, exactly. Half will go on the other.
Ron Roberts explained it as breaking it up 6 and 5 with what the projected starters are going to be. And I'm assuming that Tim Kramsey will do something similar, although that whole O-line thing
line quarterback
is what to look for.
Yeah.
So, you know what? It's about the fans who are in attendance showing them, look, hey, here's some playmakers we're going to have. Here's what our new roster looks like. Because also, this is a very important factor for Arkansas football right now. we've brought all these transfers guys in. Here's what our freshmen look like. So many newcomers. I think it's 62.
Gosh.
And then look what Jaheim Johnson looks like at cornerback, what Lakai Rowland looks like, what our new safeties look like. There's so much newness.
62.
Crazy.
Out of 110, 115, five, somewhere in there?
Right. Well, you know, you have to fund all of the positions now, I think, or you're supposed to. I don't know, 105, something like that.
That's insane. 62. Like, I mean, it's and it's not even the first year that this has happened, but that still just is jarring when you hear that number. That there's 60, and the thing is like it'll probably be the same way next year,
yeah,
because of just the like the discontent that players have, you know. I don't know. It's
we're not going to fix NIL, and we're not going
to. Well, we're not trying to
sitting right here, but it's a part of the game now. Silverfield dealt with 70 newcomers last year at Memphis, and I've said it on here before. But when I saw Memphis has 70 newcomers. They cannot gel in time to beat Arkansas.
I thought the same thing.
But they were at home, and they got the break. They got that pass interference, non-pass interference call when they were ahead 28-10, and Memphis won the game.
Mm-hmm.
And now that coaching staff that was able to make a competitive roster out of 70-something newcomers is here at Arkansas.
But Arkansas had how many newcomers last year?
56
of them? So, I mean, you get to a certain point. You cross a certain threshold – and I don't know that it really matters how many newcomers you have, because basically you got a whole new team, regardless of if, you know, your top 20 backups are newcomers or your top 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We can talk and talk about this. And yeah, quarterback play is where Arkansas's got to be good. They've got to surround KJ Jackson and AJ Hill with quality talent, get the ball to them, and go to work.
I'm glad you mentioned quarterbacks, because I thought about this when you were talking about A.J. Hill's completion percentage. Like in the portions of practice that you're able to see, and I'll say this, you know, I think what you're able to see and what actually goes on in practice are two very different things. But in what you've been able to see or discern from talking to coaches or players, is this a more down-the-field offense, or is this – do you complete 73 passes or 73% of your passes because you're not throwing anything more than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage?
Right. They want to be able to challenge deep, but it looks to me like they're setting up to be a high screen game team, and I think Memphis was. And Tim Kramsey was asked about this yesterday and talked about it a little bit, that so many teams want to pressure you now and dictate the timing of your plays and try to disrupt you on the early – because RPO game's getting faster and faster – they want to disrupt what you're doing. And so if you can hit screen plays and turn them into fast breaks, is what Kramsey calls them, then you're getting C.J. Brown the ball or Ishmael Cece the ball or Sutton Smith out on an edge or whatever, and bam, to discourage the defenses from pushing and committing to pressure tactics. So that's the way you can possibly defeat pressure. So they have to make sure that the mesh, the timing and rhythm of the snap and then the quick throw out to the edges is effective for them. But you cannot ever give up on trying to beat somebody deep, and that's part of their package as well.
Hey, how funny is this? I just got a text message. It said it's from a business that has my email address offering me their Visa card. So how appropriate.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all day. It's every day. It's text messages. It's push alerts. It's emails. It never
yes,
ends.
It, is.
It never ends. Every coaching staff is going to say, you know, like two things you can always count on in football is on signing day, they met their needs, and after the spring, they got better. Right? So, yeah. But like, kind of reading between the lines, how much better have they gotten this spring? Like where are they at maybe this spring versus this time last year? Or can you even make that kind of assumption based on all the differences, you know, with new coaching staff, 60 new players and everything else?
Yeah, it's hard to make the assumption. But I did talk to somebody who was part of the program who felt remember thinking, coming out of spring last year, I felt really good about this team. And we've gone over ad nauseum how close they were to winning a bunch of tight games. I will say this. I think the players they have believe in what the staff is doing, and there's a unity about them. And so that counts for something. Their ability to pull out a close game, we have no idea what that's going to look like at Arkansas. But that's what it takes to pull out.
It was a struggle for them at Memphis last year. I mean, they beat Arkansas, but they had some –
Memphis did, especially
they underachieved at Memphis last season relative to the expectations for that team, especially after they got off to, what was it, 6-0 and 7-0.
And I think it was 7-1 or 8-1.
People were talking about them as the group of five playoff team.
They
you know, they spit the bit down the stretch.
They did. And I can't remember where I was, but I remember listening to the end of the ECU game. It was a very tight game, and they lost the game at East Carolina, and that was a big one. So they didn't close out the season very well. But before that, they were better at closing out close games than Arkansas was. So many things go into it, what your team unity is like, how much you believe, if you have a tough game and a setback, how you keep a team together, and the quarterback play that we mentioned that's going to be so large for this Razorbacks team. So I have better thoughts about where they are defensive line depth. That stands for something. And at linebacker. Now, what will the defensive backfield look like? What will the rotation look like? All that remains to be seen. They had some injuries at linebacker, too, that affected their depth in spring. But having now seen the number of practices we have, which is 13, the fact that Bradley Shaw, Jaquavion Smith, Wyatt Simmons, and then the guys who have been dinged up feel fairly good about linebacker. But O-line, I have some concerns. I mean, I think Quincy Rhodes and those guys have won more reps against the tackles than the offensive tackles have won. And the no spring portal cuts both ways. Now, if somebody's dinged up and might miss the season, you can't replace them. You've got to fulfill from your current roster. And so offensive tackle, they've got a ways to go. With Broussard and Bryant Williams being the two that they've depended on the most. So I would say that right now I feel a little bit more comfortable defensively than I do offensively.
It's always hard when you're trying to – like you said, defensive line has won more than offensive line has. It's really hard. Is that because the defensive line is just, like, really good? Is it because – you know, we ran into this with baseball this year. You know, it was the – pitching was winning a lot of the inter-squad scrimmages. Now, a lot of these were closed because of the weather. You know, give credit to Dave Van Horn that, you know, if the sun is out, like, he didn't care if you're in the stadium watching them. I love that. Yeah. I love that the paranoia that has overcome college football does not exist necessarily in other sports. But, you know, but where I was going with that was the pitching – based on what we saw and what we were hearing, was winning a lot of the scrimmages. And well, what we have seen now when the season began was that offensively, they just don't have as good of an offense this year. I mean, it's been a challenge for them. And so but that's always the hard part. You know, it's like you never know at this time of year, and you're not going to know this in August when, you know, we basically go through spring football all over again in terms of the way it gets, you know, covered and watching practices and whatnot. If the wins are because one group is just really superior, or, and I think this is probably the case more often than not, there are issues with the team or with that side of the ball, you know, that group, whatever, that keeps getting beat so often.
Right. It's always a comparison, and it's always, for a lot of different reasons, I think defenses have natural advantages at the start of any practice session. And Silverfield even said that today on his appearance on radio. And just because it's a lot more attack mode and that kind of thing, and offenses have to be so much more, the communication has to be good, and all the checks you make at the line have to be good, or it's exposed. So, having said all that, I also think, you know, Quincy Rhodes is in a good place. Tim Kramsey yesterday just said he's a problem. So that applies to the other SEC teams as well. But I also think just the depth of the Hunter Osbournes and Xavier Sims and the Carlin Joneses, I just think they're going to be a little deeper and more talented on their line. And so it's incumbent on the Arkansas offensive line this summer to really, I think, get better.
You keep throwing all these names out where it's like I read it maybe when they were on their official visit or something.
Right.
It took me, in talking about the number of newcomers, it took me probably until like the seventh or eighth game last year where I was not just, you know, multiple times per game checking a roster. It's like, who is that guy? And what happens is that there's the turnover is so fast now. And that players wear kind of similar numbers in, you know, certain positions. So, like, inevitably, there's always going to be a cornerback wearing, like, number one or something. And, you know, it's like my brain automatically goes to, oh, well, he was here 2 years ago. Right. There have been three people here since then. Right.
I'll give you another short example of that. Because football's so much bigger roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last year when I was, you know, ill and coming back, I missed about half a spring.
Mm-hmm.
And when I showed up out there, it was looking at the roster and looking at the guys on the field, it took me a minute to adjust. And mm-hmm. the same thing holds for this spring as well because of all the turnover. It takes a while to put numbers to names, and especially the young freshmen.
Yeah,
remembering their numbers because they're not, you know, they're not in with the ones and twos as often.
The newcomers, those are always the hard ones. I remember when Sebastian Tortola threw his touchdown pass. I thought it was Ray Dominguez. 73 the year before, or, you know, for a few years before that or something. So this isn't just a transfer portal era problem.
Keep your eye on 99 and then 93, Beal and Kennedy. I think Beal could be a pretty special player as a freshman.
Has there ever been anything that stood out to you in the spring that actually ended up, you know, being something to watch or material? Like, has there been a player in a spring football game who you said, whoa, I didn't know he had that in him, and it ended up becoming something for the team? Because I was sitting here thinking, because I was asking myself that same question, because I used to go to all the spring games. I don't go anymore because of the baseball commitments. But I can't think of anything. All I can really ever think about in the spring is people getting hurt. And it impacting, you know, potentially their depth when the season rolls around.
Right. Well, on short notice, Mike Washington, everybody was talking about him early in camp and like in last spring,
mm-hmm.
and he materialized. And I'm just so happy. Tonight's the first night of the draft. I don't think he'll go tonight. But
glad you mentioned that.
I'm really happy that Mike Washington came here, had a very productive year. And I know he had a fumble in the Memphis game, and that mm-hmm. was basically the determining factor. But very happy for that kid and his NFL journey.
Doesn't look like any Razorbacks are going to get drafted tonight. First round, second and third round tomorrow. Probably a chance that he could go that range. Remember, like Isaac Tesla kind of surprised some people by going in the third round last year.
Right.
I don't think any of us were expecting that he would be the first one.
There were a few indications coming out of the testing because he tested so mm-hmm. well. And I remember writing, Landon Jackson is the mm-hmm. guy who, you know, most people would think would be the first. But watch out, yeah. Tesla tested well, and all it takes is that one team. It was the hometown Detroit Lions who made yeah. that move.
Well, he had impressed them whenever he went to their meeting with them. You know, he grew up a Lions fan. He actually wore his custom-made Isaac Tesla jersey.
Yep.
That's ballsy because if it doesn't work out, you know, I mean, if that can be misinterpreted
exactly.
pretty fast by those front office people.
He sold the GM.
He did.
He got on board, and it worked out for them. And he got a bunch of touchdowns, but he, you know, I would really like to see his playing time move up.
I guess Talon Green is the other player that – to watch just because, and you knew he would have really good testing numbers. I mean, he was a track star in high school. He could have easily been a Division I college track guy if that's where he would have put his focus. And so, you know, he can run, he can jump, but he also has all these years of film of turnovers and bad decision making that I think that, you know, has to be. I don't know what I think about that because you keep hearing his name. I guess what's going to happen is there's 32 teams. Somebody is going to be enamored with him and say, let's try it. And they're going to take him. But I think that, you know, the resume that he has is going to scare a lot of teams off too.
I think it will because of the turnover, because the fumbles too. Like, it's more than just interceptions. It's ball security when he runs mm-hmm. it. And if you have him, you're going to want him to be able to run it some. Mm-hmm. I think the idea has to be that he's going to be a good backup for us and learn. But they've got to work on, I think, his processing speed. They've got to improve.
Decision-making.
And it's all part of the same thing. And Bobby Petrino's system is really difficult, and he did okay with it. But the NFL's takes it to a little bit different level, and so processing is got to be improved. But I love Taylen Green as a human being. I think he's a wonderful person, mm-hmm. and I wish him the best.
There's just so many instances when he was at Arkansas, even this last season, where you know he just makes a play where it's like, why did you? Think about the interception he threw against Memphis.
It was in the red zone.
And then the play that got him benched against Texas. I mean, it's and those aren't the only ones. So we'll see what happens with him. But we're not expecting any Razorbacks to go tonight in the NFL draft, which I believe will just be the first round. Is that right? I think just the first round tonight. So and then it'll go through Saturday. We think that there will be a handful of Razorbacks who will get drafted. You can read Tom's coverage at WholeHogSports.com. He's our main football reporter there. He'll be at the spring game on Saturday. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We'll talk about the Razorback baseball game tonight and look forward to tomorrow night's game. We're expecting to have Greg Olson, who's going to be on the call on SEC Network the next two nights with us tomorrow. Hope to see you then or at our website, WholeHogSports.com.